Thank you, Vishu. And dear listeners, Sairam, and welcome one and all to yet another episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. Yet another beautiful Thursday is drawing to a close. And bringing you as part of this week's Thursday Live, we're bringing you the second last segment of this week. And as always, I'm being joined by Brother Sai Prakash from Team Radio Sai. Sairam, Sai Prakash.
Sairam, Prem. I think we are venturing to start the next discourse, that is the sixth discourse in the series.
Right.
Given by Bhagwan in 1990, summer course. And Swami has been expounding the significance of the body, the senses, and I think it's the turn of the mind right now.
Right. The past two discourses, I think Swami spoke extensively on the control of the senses. And now it's the mind. And very beautifully, Swami's name, the discourse is named Hold the Reins.
Hold the Reins, right. That's true.
And before we talk about this discourse or we give you a summary of what we've been doing, we would like to first of all beg pardon to all our listeners because the clips we're going to play for this discourse are not of very fine audio quality because it was not recorded in very good audio quality. Whatever we could, we have tried to enhance the quality and present it to you. But we would suggest that if you're listening to this program through a computer with an internet connection, you could go to the site ssbpt.info. That is SSS, B for Baba, P for Puttaparthi, and T for Thursday. That's ssbpt.info. If you go there, you will find in the left there are links for Swami's Vahinis, Summer Showers, and the other discourses. You can select Summer Showers. You'll be taken to a page where you'll be shown all the summer course discourses which are there. You can pick the 1990 summer course series. It'll show all the chapters. And we are in the sixth discourse. And the discourse name is, as we mentioned, Hold the Reins. So I think that way you'll be able to follow the discourse even as we play it here, clip by clip. Coming to what Swami has been telling us all this while, you know, so beautifully Swami is relating not only the need for controlling the different senses, but also giving us the manual as to how each of these can be done, the senses and the other aspects of the human body.
That's true, but there's something significant that we are coming to when we start this chapter, as I'm just thinking about it. Till now, we were dealing with things, rather the body, the senses, which you can see, which you can perceive. Now we are going into a stage, we are going to the mind, we are going to start dealing with the mind. What is the scientific proof, if any? Can we see the mind? Does the mind exist as a physical entity? There is a brain that we all know, but does the mind really exist?
Right, you know, the presence of the brain does not guarantee the presence of the mind, actually.
That's true.
And, so what is that and where does that exist?
When you actually go through the discourse and you see how much importance is given to the mind and how Swami says everything is because of the mind, you start wondering what is more powerful, the gross or the subtle. Obviously, it is the subtle because these are senses, the body, this is what you see, you can feel them, you perceive them, you hear through them. But then there is the subtler mind, which we do not know whether it exists. You just have to go based on your faith and you have to go based on a deeper sense of understanding that basically you are going beyond the physical in another way, putting it in another way. You are trying to understand that there are entities, there is something which is beyond the physical.
Right.
You cannot limit it. You cannot limit everything that there is to just physical, because you perceive with your eyes, which is one of the senses, and you are limiting it to the capability of the eye. So if there is something that the eye cannot see, does that mean that such a thing does not exist? Take the mind, for example. Because there is no physical entity for the mind, does it mean that the mind doesn't exist?
Very true. I think, you know, if you look at man's scientific journey, that is one of the things which man has understood, you know, through his endeavors in science. Because every aspect which he has studied of the physical manifest universe has taught him that there is something beyond what he can see. There is something beyond what he can hear and what he can feel. with his ability, because even if you take the concept of light,
mm-hmm.
it was only what was seen.
True.
But the more they studied into light, they realized that there are so many spectrums which cannot be seen with the naked eye. And the very fact that you cannot see them does not, say that they do not exist.
That's true.
So I think the very fact that you become more knowledgeable,
mm-hmm.
you begin to accept things which may not be under your, area of understanding also.
True.
Because, one of the discourses which we went through, Swami says that, the most obvious thing is diversity. The most obvious cognizable entity in nature is diversity, because there's no individual who is similar to another individual.
Very true.
But human intellect and human ability lies in seeing the unity behind all that diversity.
That's true.
So as you said, so the mind is one of the most important things, because it itself is an embodiment of that paradox.
True.
Existence without being noticed.
Correct. Swami says the thoughts make up the mind, and this is like a threshold, actually, because food, if you see, has a physical existence, and Swami says the thoughts are governed by the food. So if you eat sattvic ahara or good food, then you get good thoughts. So here is where we are crossing the line from an actually physical thing like food to something subtle, that is thoughts, which does not have a physical appearance.
Very true. And even looking at it from the point of view of devotion, we all would like to be obedient to Swami, right? When Swami tells us something, we want to do it. And in a certain level, we believe that we are all obedient. We all feel that Swami has not told me anything, and if He tells me, I'll definitely do it. Because we believe that, our love for Swami, our devotion, or the kind of respect we have for Swami will give us that obedience. If Swami were to be here and Swami says, you don't sit down, you stand and talk, so we would stand and talk. Or if Swami says, no, you stop talking, we would stop talking. These are all possible because we have control over this sitting and standing and talking and not talking. We have control over this physical body of us.
Correct.
And anything which Swami would give pertaining to our physical presence, that would be easy to follow. If Swami says, eat only dinner, don't eat breakfast and lunch, it would be difficult, but we can do it.
We can do it, that's true.
But if Swami were to come and tell us that you should not think more than 4 thoughts a day.
God.
Okay. However much we might love to be obedient to Swami, it would be absolutely impossible, because we have not earned that control over the mind as much as we've earned the control over the body.
That's true.
So we have done so much in obedience to what Swami wanted. We wore clothes like what Swami wanted. We groomed ourselves the way Swami wanted. But it is still incomplete obedience, because we cannot control the mind and, maneuver it the way Swami would want us to do. So even devotionally, our obedience to Swami is not 100% unless we control
our
mind.
As you are talking about devotion, it's something so beautiful, and somewhere, I think it's in the Viveka Chudamani, I read. There, Adi Shankara goes into different ways that are used to control the mind. He says something like Sama, for example, is continuously telling the mind that this is not what it is, it is not what it is, and get detached again and again. Then Dhamma, that is self-control,
right.
You control. Then he says Titiksha. Uparati, titiksha, all these things are ways. But
samadhana,
then you go to Shraddha. Then these ways he propounds. But you just go a few shlokas later, he says there's nothing higher than devotion. He says the moment you have 100% devotion and you are ready to, I think there he mentions have devotion to the guru, for example.
Right.
So there he mentions it in that context. But for us, where Swami himself is our guru, if we just try to follow him with devotion, these don't become an end. They become they automatically happen.
Right.
We should not say that, I have to achieve Sama, I have to achieve Dhamma, I have to achieve self-control. But they automatically get part of you when you have the devotion to Swami.
Very true. You know, if you look at it, suppose you have a boy who is studying in a school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he loves to play.
Mm-hmm.
Evening time, he loves to go out and play. But the sense that comes in when there is an exam which is impending, you know,
mm-hmm.
he knows that, I know I like this, I know I get a lot of joy out of this, but I know now I should not play, I should study.
Mm.
Okay, because there is a sense of purpose.
Correct.
There is something which is higher, which he is after.
Mm.
I think that's what devotion does to us. When you have pleasing that deity or that personality whom you call a guru, or in our situation being Swami, that idea of pleasing Swami is uppermost in the agenda.
Mm.
That, you know, you are ready to put yourself through anything if I can please Swami.
And, you know, just few discourses back, Swami said, what is devotion? Devotion is, you know, when you turn towards the Atman. Devotion is towards Atman, to strive to reach oneness with Atman. That is devotion. See, whether you call it Swami, Guru or whatever, but it's ultimately trying to turn inwards. And he says that power is in you. So he says that is true devotion.
And you know, talking about this Sama, Dhamma and Purati, they're called the Sat Shampatis.
Okay.
You know, the sixfold wealth a person is supposed to acquire. And interestingly, you know, though these look like very simple six things, you know, the Brahma Sutra start with that aphorism which says, Athato Brahma Jignasa.
Yes, correct.
Henceforth, you will seek the Brahman.
Correct.
And in explanation to that one statement, you know, the Brahma Sutra say that these are all qualifications if which you have, you will come to that state of henceforth you will seek the Brahman.
Oh, that's the first line.
And you know, that is what Swami has been doing, and we are, you know, you can say midway. Swami spoke about, you know, Dhamma is body and sense control. Sama is mind control. So Sama, Dhamma, and Swami is going through all that, and Swami will talk about Viveka, which is also one of the aspects of discrimination, the Buddhi playing roles. And all these are so important, you know, in this, it adds one by one, brick by brick, to that ultimate image, which Swami spoke of in the first discourse.
It's very true. See, the whole purpose is, when just imagine hundreds and thousands and millions of people who have absolutely no knowledge of things like this. I mean, yes, people may know there is a brain, and some may know there is a mind. There may be many who may not even know that there is something called a mind, that there is something called a buddhi, there is something called an atma. Sometimes you just wonder, people have come, they have lived their lives, and they go back without knowing any of these. And yes, we are fortunate that we know this, but by following this, what is it that we are going to achieve? I mean, unless the joy of actually knowing the Atman and being one with your true self is much, 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 much higher than any of the joy that you have ever experienced. I mean, so many sages and so many seers would have never gone on that path, because it's so simple to just go on an outward path. So he says pravritti and nivritti. So it's actually so simple to go on the path, just lead your life swayed by the senses. Unless the what we are really trying to achieve is gives you so much more happiness and so much more joy, it's not really worth pursuing.
True. You know, we talk of human nature.
Mm.
One of the flaws of human nature being the ability to not be satisfied.
True.
You know, that's what drives materialism and capitalism, whatever you call it in the world.
Mm.
That is what drives, because man is not satisfied. But if you look at it, that very attitude of not being satisfied is also the fuel for spiritual pursuit also.
Very true.
Because man is not being able to, you know, find satisfaction in being in comfort, living in a peaceful environment. Because there is something that, you know, there is something more to it, something more happiness which gives something special more than what I'm having now. Even the most happy and most comfortable of persons get to think this way.
Correct.
And I think that is what Swami has encashed on, you know, in all of us. That very flaws with which we came to Swami, you know, those themselves have become paths for us. Those very themselves true. Have Swami has utilized to, you know, draw us closer to Him.
So I think,
so maybe we should go to the first discourse, first part of this discourse. This is the sixth discourse in the series, 1990 Samukhosa. This was delivered on the 24th of May. So let us begin to listen to the first clip of that discourse.
manase hetu manugadakunu bandhamunaku manyatakunu manase hetu manujuni manugadakunu bandhamunaku manyatakunu మనసే ముక్తికి ముఖ్యము మనసే ముక్తికి ముఖ్యము మనసే నరకంబు తెచ్చు మైమరపించు మనసే ముక్తికి ముఖ్యము మనసే నరకంబు తెచ్చి మైమరపించు మనసే మనసే నరకంబు నిచ్చు మైమరపించు
ఫర్ ది గ్రోత్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ ఫర్ హిస్ బాడీ అండ్ ఫర్ కన్ఫరింగ్ రెస్పెక్ట్ ఆన్ హిమ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ది మైండ్ విచ్ ఇస్ ది కాజ్ అండ్ విచ్ ఇస్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్. For liberation also, mind is the cause. Mind is capable of putting you into hell and make you forget yourself, getting intoxicated.
Vijayanthulara,
your students,
manasu, kadikini, manam.
Man is a combination of body, mind and atma.
మానవుని యొక్క భావములను నిర్ణయించి అంతని ఉన్నత స్థితి కోల్పోయేటువంటి సోపానములు.
దీస్ ఆర్ ద స్టెప్స్ అండ్ స్టెప్పింగ్ స్టోన్స్ ఫర్ ద మ్యాన్ టు మేక్ హిస్ ఫీలింగ్స్ గ్రో ఇన్ టు ది హైయెస్ట్ లెవెల్.
కర్మలు ఆచరించినది దేహం.
ద బాడీ పర్ఫార్మ్స్ యాక్షన్.
ఈశ్వరునిది మనస్సు.
మైండ్ నోస్ అబౌట్ ఇట్.
నిత్యమై సత్యమై నిరంతరము ఉన్నది ఆత్మ.
ఆత్మ ఇస్ వన్ విచ్ ఇస్ పర్మనెంట్ అండ్ ఎటర్నల్ అండ్ కంటిన్యూస్లీ యాక్ట్స్ యాజ్ అ విట్నెస్.
ఇదియే మానవుని అందరి దేవత.
దట్ ఈస్ ది వెరీ గాడ్ ఇన్ మ్యాన్.
చేయుట, తెలుసుకునుట, ఉండుట, ఈ త్రిశక్తుల యొక్క అభివ్యక్తమే మానవత్వం.
డూయింగ్, బికమింగ్ అవే అండ్ బీయింగ్, దీస్ ఆర్ ద త్రీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ ఆస్పెక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్.
అయితే మనసు, దేహము, ఆత్మ వేరు వేరు రూపముల చేత వేరు వేరు ఫలితములను అందించుతూ వేరు వేరు నామములు కలిగి ఉండినప్పటికీ ఈ మూడింటి యొక్క ఏకత్వము చేతనే మానవత్వము దివ్యత్వంలో నుండి పోగొచ్చుంది.
బాడీ, మైండ్ అండ్ ఆత్మ హ్యావ్ డిఫరెంట్ నేమ్స్, డిఫరెంట్ ఫార్మ్స్ అండ్ డిఫరెంట్ నేచర్. బట్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్ పుట్ టుగెదర్ ఆర్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్ మేకింగ్ మ్యాన్ డివైన్.
ఈ మూడింటి యొక్క భిన్నత్వమే మానవుని పశుత్వం కుంగిపోతుంది.
వెన్ యూ బ్రింగ్ అబౌట్ డిఫరెన్స్ బిట్వీన్ దీస్ త్రీ అండ్ మేక్ దెమ్ గో ఇన్ డిఫరెంట్ డైరెక్షన్స్, హీ బికమ్స్ ఎన్ యానిమల్.
లౌకికంగా, పారలౌకికంగా మనం తరచుగా వినేటువంటిది అంతఃకరణ అనే పదం.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది వర్డ్ అంతఃకరణ విచ్ వీ కామన్లీ హియర్ both in common parlance and in spiritual language.
ఏమిటి ఈ అంతఃకరణ?
What do you mean by this అంతఃకరణ?
దీని స్వరూపం ఏమిటి?
What is its form?
దీని స్వభావం ఏమిటి?
What is its nature?
దీని విశిష్టత ఏమిటి?
What is its speciality?
దీని గమ్యం ఏమిటి?
What is its goal?
అని విచారణ చేసినప్పుడు మనసే అనేక విధములైనటువంటి యొక్క సూక్ష్మ రూపమును ధరించి అంతఃకరణ అనేటువంటి పేరును అందుకుంటూ ఉన్నది.
వెన్ యూ ఎంక్వైర్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ యూ విల్ కన్క్లూడ్ దట్ ఇన్ హిస్ సటిల్ ఫార్మ్స్ mind takes the form of antakarana. Ili manasu, buddhi, chittamu, ankaram. Ili naalugu aakaramulu kudanu manase srishtu untundadi. There are four forms which this mind takes. The mind per se, intelligence, chittam and ego. Buddhi, chittamu, ahankaramu, manasu yokka sutva swarupamudi. Intelligence, chittam and ego are these subtle forms of mind. Okkokka karma yendu pravesinchinappudu okkokka perunu pondutu untundadi. Mind while doing different functions will get a different name. ఒకే బ్రాహ్మణుడు మందిరం నందు భగవంతుని పూజ చేస్తున్నప్పుడు అతన్ని పూజారి బ్రాహ్మణుడు అంటారు.
When a Brahmin is performing worship in the temple, he is called a priest.
ఇతనే వంట రూమ్ లో వంట చేస్తున్నప్పుడు ఇది వంట బ్రాహ్మణుడు అంటారు.
When the same Brahmin is cooking food in the kitchen, he is called a cooking Brahmin, a cook. Brahmin cook.
ఈ బ్రాహ్మణుడే విద్యార్థులకు విద్య బోధించుతున్నప్పుడు ఆధ్యాత్మిక బ్రాహ్మణుడు ఉంటారు.
When the same Brahmin is teaching to the students, he is called the Brahmin teacher.
పంచాంగమును చెప్పుతున్నప్పుడు ఇతను పంచాంగ బ్రాహ్మణుడు అంటారు.
When he is telling something about the astrology, he is called an astrologer.
బ్రాహ్మణుడు ఒక్కడే అయినప్పటికీ ఆ బ్రాహ్మణుడు చేసే వృత్తులను పురస్కరించుకుని అతనికి ఇతి నామములు కలుగుతూ వచ్చాయి.
ఆన్ ద బేసిస్ ఆఫ్ ఫంక్షన్స్ పర్ఫార్మ్ బై ది బ్రాహ్మిన్, ఆల్దో బ్రాహ్మిన్ ఇస్ వన్, గెట్స్ డిఫరెంట్ నేమ్స్.
అదే విధముగానే సంకల్ప కర్మతో కూడినప్పుడు దీని మనస్సు అని ఒక పేరుతో పిలుస్తూ వచ్చాయి.
ఇన్ ద సేమ్ వే వెన్ దర్ ఈస్ ది థాట్ ప్రాసెసెస్, ఇట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ మైండ్.
వివేచన అనేటువంటి ఒక సమయం నందు అనగా విచక్షణ జ్ఞానము చేత విషయమును విచారించి నిర్ణయపరిచేటువంటి సమయం నందు దీనికి బుద్ధి అని పేరు తప్పించారు.
వెన్ ఇట్ ఎంక్వైర్స్ ఇన్ టు ది నేచర్ ఆఫ్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ అండ్ టేక్స్ ఎ డెసిషన్, ఇట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ బుద్ధి.
ఇది కేవలము విచక్షణ జ్ఞానముతో కూడినటువంటి విచారణ.
It is an inquiry based upon discrimination.
దీనిని డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ నాలెడ్జ్ అంటారు.
దిస్ ఆల్సో ఇస్ కాల్డ్ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్ నాలెడ్జ్.
మూడవది చిత్తము. ఇది స్మృత్యాత్మకమైనటువంటిది కనుకనే దీనికి చిత్తము అని పేరు వచ్చింది.
ది థర్డ్ వన్ ఈస్ చిత్తము.
స్మృత్యాత్మకమైనటువంటిది.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ద వన్ విచ్ రిమెంబర్స్ and therefore it is called chittam, memory.
దేహముతో సాధారణ పొందిన సమయం నందు కలిగేటువంటి యొక్క స్వరూపమునికే అహంకారము అని పిలుస్తూ వచ్చారు.
When the mind identifies itself with the body, it is called ego.
ఒకే మనస్సు ఇన్ని కర్మలయందు ఇన్ని స్థానములయందు ఇన్ని రకములైనటువంటి పేర్లను పొందుతూ ప్రకటిస్తూ వచ్చింది.
Mind gets these different names depending upon the function which it performs.
Annintiki manase karanam.
For everything, mind is the cause.
Ee prapanchamantayi kudunu manasu cheta kattabadi untundali.
This entire world is created by mind.
Manomoolam idam jagattu.
The world exists by mind.
Manasu lenatvantidi ekkada kudunu kanaradu.
It is difficult to come across a space where you do not have mind functioning.
Itti manasunu kaliginatuvanti vaadu kanukane itaniki manushyudu ani peru vachindi.
Man gets the name manushyudu because he has a manas, mind.
So that was the first clip, and dear listeners, you would agree with us that audio quality was a bit bad, but we hope you would have followed what Swami said, because these were the theoretical aspects of the mind. I think Swami is going to fall back into this. This is almost like the course 101 of of the human mind.
It's like the definitions.
Right.
The definitions are being given, and It's,
and again, you know, that pattern with which Swami delivers that discourse, that poem in the beginning is so beautiful. You know, it gives the idea of, you know, we're going to take this chapter. Why is this chapter important?
Executive summary.
Right, you know, why are we having this chapter? Why are we going to talk about the mind? Because the mind is such and such. You know, this is the nature of the mind and this is the power of the mind. That's why it's important to understand it. And Swami says, mind is a cause for rise and fall. Mind is a cause for bondage and liberation. And mind alone, you know, makes man forget his reality and land himself in hell.
Hell. So powerful. But, you know, the first paragraph especially, each sentence is so measured. I mean, this suddenly struck me today as we was hearing to Swami, although the quality was poor, as you mentioned. But each sentence is so measured and each sentence is so deep. I mean, each sentence has so much you can discuss upon. See, he says, the body is the instrument for actions. The mind is concerned with cognition. It's the mind that knows. That's the what's translated. But the body is meant for action.
So beautifully, Swami says, the mind, body and the Atma, the three aspects of any living entity. And then Swami says, thus, doing, knowing and being.
Correct.
Are the manifestations of human personality. Where, you know, doing
is the body.
Is the body. Knowing
is the mind.
And being
is the Atman.
Is the Atman or the consciousness.
I don't think it can be made simpler than this.
Really?
And there's nothing more to add in this. It's so simple.
And maybe as Swami said, we could just reiterate this thing of Swami explaining the four aspects of the mind. Swami says that, you know, the four aspects are the manas, buddhi, chitta and ahankara.
Correct.
Where manas is the thinking mind, all the thought processes which go on, you know, the wavering nature of the mind. That is actually an attribute of what we call manas.
Correct.
And buddhi is the intellect. Swami says the discrimination knowledge. That which decides what is right, what is wrong, what has to be done, what should not be done. That is the role. When the mind takes that role, it is buddhi or the intellect. And chitta is the memory. That Correct. Which preserves all the impressions. And what Swami says in other discourses is that this chitta actually carries forward these impressions from birth to birth.
Okay, yes.
You know, it is almost like that hard drive which essentially makes that personality. And you know, this is something which is coming to be known even scientifically now.
Okay.
You know, when they do psychology, when they study why certain people behave in a certain way. Why certain people in a similar situation, why one gets angry, one, you know, gets scared.
Correct.
One reacts differently. That is because of the way they are wired. You know, that's the word they use now. The way you're wired. Because nervously, you know, neurologically how you're made. That is because of your life experiences.
Tell them it's the mind.
I just think of that. You know, think of chitta. And before we go to that, ahankara is of course the ego.
Correct.
Which thinks that you are separate from the others. Now, thinking of this memory, I remember I have a friend who is extremely scared of lizards.
Okay.
Okay. The moment he sees a lizard, he'll run away. And I used to think, you know, what's with the lizard? Because even when you're children, we've always lived with, you know, in India, you just live with
correct
some of these creatures. So we've always had lizards in our home. And I used to always wonder why he's so scared of lizards. But then later he told me that when he was a kid once, you know, he had a very bad experience with the lizard. I think a lizard fell on him when he was a small kid and he developed an infection.
Okay.
His face swelled, got swollen to about 2 times its size.
Oh, okay.
And he took close to 2 or 3 weeks to recover from it.
Okay.
So, you know, if you look at it, that was the impression which had gone in his mind. And the way he reacts when he sees a lizard will always be based on that experience of his. And because my childhood, I've never had an experience such as that.
Correct.
I would never be able to understand his reaction.
That's
towards
true.
That unless he explains it. And that again goes with, you know, some people how they are scared with dogs. And most of them would have either had a bad experience of being bitten by a stray dog or would have seen somebody being bitten by a stray dog.
That's true. And of course, memory in that sense is so important in every aspect. Like, many of us remember our teachers
right.
when we were in the school, or remember our friends we remember our roommates, and so many instances associated with that. In a way, that shapes our approach and that right. shapes our...
And you know, that is the beautiful thing of this chitta, because what you said in the beginning about believing in the existence of something which cannot be seen,
mm-hmm.
actually that role comes in this chitta aspect of the mind.
Correct.
Because the mind, you know, it sees, like if you see the first few scientists, how did they discover that the earth is round?
Mm.
You know, one of the classic examples, even when we study in science, we come across, is when they see a ship approaching
mm-hmm.
from the deep seas.
Correct.
They see that the ship is not seen from small to big.
Mm.
They see the top part of the ship, then they see the rest of the ship. So they're saying that it must be coming from something, some surface which is lower. It's Correct. Almost like the ship is raising.
Mm.
So then they said that's possible only if the surface is round.
Correct.
Okay. If you look at it, the ability to collect information, even as you see it, and put it in context with which something which you've already seen. And you say, okay, I've seen this happen this way. Now I'm seeing this happen. So let me put this together. And I understand something which I'm not actually seeing.
That's true. I mean, just take the same example that you gave of the boy seeing the lizard. I mean, it is the eye that sees the lizard as a lizard, but it is the chitta that right. associates the memory of
Absolutely.
What happened with it, and the whole body reacts. It's like, you know, throwing a pebble in the lake. The lake is placid and without any disturbance. The moment a pebble falls, there are so many ripples. So also, I think these thoughts that come in the mind, they cause ripples all over right. the body. The whole body responds to it.
Right, you know, one Advaitic guru, he explains that point. He said, how will it be if you're absolutely dissociated from the mind?
Mm-hmm.
He said, you will be a perfect neutral observer.
Okay.
So he was explaining, you know, the concept of the chitta coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm sitting in a common place, in a public space like an airport or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And my flight is delayed by an hour. I'm sitting there and I'm seeing, I have nothing to do, so I'm just looking around. So he says, I'm just seeing people as they come. Some people are taking their luggage, some people are running for the flight, you know, some people are standing in the checkout line. I have no impressions. I'm just seeing things as it happens.
Okay.
Okay, and so I'm not emotionally aroused. I'm not thinking of anything. I'm just seeing the scene.
Correct.
But the moment I see somebody whom I recognize, the moment I see somebody who at least resembles somebody whom I know, immediately, you know, the mind jumps into action and starts thinking, you know, what Correct. Is this person doing here?
Correct.
Or brings in memories of that person, your association with that person. So he says, as long as this chitta is completely negated, you can be in that perfect sakshi bhutam, what you call that state of being a witness. So I think that is why this chitta is such an important thing.
True.
And that's why over and over again in all spiritual literature, and Swami himself emphasizes that the true essence of sadhana is to bring that chitta shuddhi.
But just out of interest, is there a way of controlling what goes into the memory? Is there a way of what goes into chitta, for example? Like, whatever you see, whatever you perceive, possibly that's why he says control your senses, so that you do not perceive, you do not see, you do not hear, you do not do something which will give you a bad memory. Which will go and sit like a blotch on the chitta.
Right. You see less and you store less.
I think that's what it is.
It must be, you know.
See, chitta shuddhi, that's what, when they say purity of chitta, for example, it is when you remember only pure things, when you remember only pure sight, when you remember only pure hearing. So for that, you have to do things which are pure.
I mean, if you look at it that way, I think when you say chitta shuddhi, when you say purity, you're talking of the native state or the state before it gets adulterated.
That's true. That's very true.
So I think the basic nature of chitta should be the belief that there is only oneness.
True.
And I think every other feeding of the senses only kind of buries this
Correct.
Main thought which is there in the chitta, and maybe layer by layer removing it is what all sadhana,
sadhana is about. That's true. But you know, somewhere else Swami has mentioned in the beginning here of, in this discourse, Swami mentions that mind is responsible for birth and for bondage and for liberation.
Right.
Elsewhere Swami has mentioned that there are three qualities that are the main reasons for rebirth. There are three qualities that cause rebirth. One is sin. another is ignorance, and third is unfulfilled desires.
Okay.
Okay, so one is sin, one is ignorance, another is unfulfilled desires. Now, when you take sin, so sin is what, it depends on your thoughts. So, when you get a good thought, your body follows the good thought. When you don't get a good thought, you do something which becomes a sin. So again, that is an aspect of the mind, thought and mind, that's related to the mind. Then you go to ignorance. Ignorance is tamas, it's a tamasic nature. And that is when the mind turns outwards.
Right.
So when the mind turns outwards, that becomes tamasic. And so that is a cause for ignorance. And then when you say unfulfilled desires, mind itself is a bundle of thoughts and desires. So, in this way, if you analyze, you realize that mind is actually the reason for bondage or liberation. So, if these three reasons are the cause for your rebirth, mind is actually the main culprit behind them.
No limit to the number of ways Swami is told how to control the mind, because that was one thing which was a question which was always asked of Swami.
Correct.
Especially, I think, students, youngsters, one of the questions we always asked for Swami, how to control the mind. You know, whenever Swami would say, if you have any questions, you ask me. I think almost at least one person would say, Swami, how do we control the mind? And Swami has given various answers, I think, depending on the person who has asked. And I think one of the things Swami has told is, you know, the perfect, beautiful analogy of the mind being the handkerchief.
Okay. Yes.
And thoughts being the threads.
Threads.
That's so he said, remove each thread. And the moment when all the threads are removed, the cloth does not exist at all.
Beautiful.
Because all these are...
I think there is one more example which Swami gives, where I think we have mentioned it in this course of this series earlier. But nevertheless, Bhakti Marga and Jnana Marga, he says God is in the first floor of the house.
Right.
Is walking on the balcony. And you want to reach God. And there is this bulldog. That is the mind. So, you go to the gate and there is this dog there. You have to somehow overcome this dog and reach God, who is the Atman. So, he says, you stand at the gate and shout out, oh God, please come and save me. Please take me. I am not able to cross this because this dog is there on my way. That is Bhakti Marga. You stand and you just shout, you cry out to the Lord, and He is bound to come. The moment He comes, the dog keeps silent and then He takes you along with Him. But Jnana Marga, on the other hand, you understand that this dog is there, you feed Him biscuits and you make Him happy, and then you easily overcome and you go up.
Very beautiful. You know, that is the thing when people ask, when devotees do many things in the name of devotion, none of these things might actually get you that ultimate state or whatever you think is the ultimate state. None of these things, you know, people do all kinds of things in the name of rituals. Will it really get you there? The answer may be no, but you know, one of the beautiful stories which they say about devotion is, you know, there's a man who's a juggler by profession.
Okay.
His profession is go to the king and juggle in front of him and entertain the king and get his livelihood by that means. So one day he goes to the temple and stands in front of the deity and starts juggling. Okay. And the story goes, to dramatize it, the Lord who is there in the temple is wondering, what is this guy doing? You know, why is he coming in front of me and juggling? So he goes on juggling and you know, the Lord comes out of curiosity and says, what are you juggling in front of me for? So that man says, you know, when I go in front of the king and juggle, he gives me money, the wealth he can. So I've come to juggle in front of you to get that wealth which you give. Okay. And then the Lord says that, you know, but don't you know that I am the Lord and you cannot please me by all this stunt. You know, you cannot please me by stunt. So he says, yes, Lord, I know. But this stunt devotion is all that I know. So I have come to offer you this stunt devotion so that you will teach me real devotion.
Lovely.
And I think that's what all, whatever we call rituals.
And that's precisely the word Swami would often use, you know, when we try to show a card, Swami, I can't live without you, anta stantra, stunt. And, you know, we just with emotion, with, you know, in the spur of the moment, we write something which we know but we do not believe in actuality. And so when we write some things like that, Swami would just say, stunt devotion.
And you know, I remember one student had this conversation with Swami. Swami asked him, what do you want? And this boy said, Swami, I want you. Okay, I want only you. But I think the moment he said that, as you said, he knows that it's an emotion which may not really equal those words. Mm. He said, Swami, I want you, but I don't understand what it is.
Mm.
I know that I'm supposed to say this, and intellectually and devotionally, I know that this is what I have to say, but I don't know what it means.
Mm.
And eventually Swami said, it doesn't matter.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if you don't know what it means and what you will get when you ask for this, but ask only for this.
Wow.
You know, even artificially, make the right prayer to start with,
then you'll understand. It's just like taking the right medicine, whether you understand the ingredients or not.
Right.
Just take it, it'll have its effect. I think that's how they came up with all the mantras and everything.
Very true. Okay, we'll go to the next clip in this discourse.
Sure.
Whatever Swami has told till now is the various aspects of the mind and the importance of the mind, the important role that mind plays in the human existence.
భావం తద్భవతి అని ఈ మనిషి యొక్క భావం ఎట్టివో దాని యొక్క ఫలితం కూడా అట్టివిగానే ఉంటాయి.
ద ఫ్రూట్స్ విచ్ మ్యాన్ రీప్స్ డిపెండ్స్ అపాన్ ద ఫీలింగ్స్ అండ్ ద థాట్స్ విచ్ మ్యాన్ హ్యాస్.
దీనిని ఆంగ్ల భాష యందు సో థింక్ ది మ్యాన్ సో ది మ్యాన్ అన్నారు.
ఇన్ ఇంగ్లీష్ లాంగ్వేజ్ ది సేమ్ థింగ్ హెస్ బీన్ టోల్డ్ అస్ సో థింక్ ది మ్యాన్ సో హీ ఈస్.
మానవత్వం అనేటువంటిది కేవలము ఒక మనస్తత్వంతో కూడినటువంటిది.
ద హ్యూమానిటీ ఈజ్ మేడ్ అప్ ఆఫ్ బేసికలీ ది మైండ్.
మనస్సు అంటే ఏమిటి?
వాట్ డూ యూ మీన్ బై మైండ్?
మనస్సు అనగా మనిషే.
మైండ్ మీన్స్ మ్యాన్.
మనిషి అనగా ఏమిటి?
వాట్ డూ యూ మీన్ బై మ్యాన్?
మనసే.
దట్ మీన్స్ మైండ్ అలోన్.
కనుక మనిషి అనగా మనసే. మనసు అనగా ఏమిటి?
Man means mind, but then what is mind?
Sankalpamulu yokka cheriki.
It is a conglomeration of thoughts.
Ee sankalpamulu yokka phalitame manavuni yokka cheriya.
Actions of man are the result of the thoughts which he has.
Ee cheriya yokka prabhavame jagattunandu nityamu manam anubhavinchetundi sukha dukkhamulu.
The joys and sorrows which we enjoy in day to day life are the result of our own actions.
జగత్తు యొక్క మంచి చెడ్డలు మానవుని యొక్క చర్యలపై ఆధారపడి ఉంటుంది.
ద గుడ్ అండ్ బ్యాడ్ విచ్ మ్యాన్ గెట్స్ డిపెండ్స్ అపాన్ హిజ్ ఓన్ యాక్షన్.
ఈ చర్యలకు ఆధారం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఇస్ ది బేసిస్ ఫర్ మ్యాన్స్ యాక్షన్స్?
సంకల్పములు, థాట్స్. కనుకనే మానవుని యొక్క సంకల్పములు సత్సంకల్పములుగా ఉండినప్పుడే జీవితము సరైనటువంటి జీవితంగా రూపొందుతుంది.
ఇఫ్ మ్యాన్ థాట్స్ ఆర్ గుడ్, his life would be good.
Sankalpamulu chaala shaktivantamainatuvi.
Thoughts are very powerful.
Manishi maraninchina appudu sankalpamulu chiranjeeviluga nichi untayi.
Even after the death of a man, the thoughts survive.
Kanukane aa sankalpamulaku sariyainatuvanti yokka sadhana manu salpali.
Therefore, we should always make efforts to cultivate good thoughts.
Just sankalpamulu manalo aavirbhavinchukunda chuchukovali.
We should never give room for bad thoughts.
దాని వల్లనే మానవునికి మానవునికి మధ్య ఉన్నటువంటి ప్రేమతత్వం క్షీణించిపోయింది.
ఇట్ ఈస్ అన్ అకౌంట్ ఆఫ్ సచ్ బ్యాడ్ థాట్స్ లవ్ బిట్వీన్ మెన్ హ్యాస్ డిక్లైన్డ్.
మానవునికి మానవునికి మధ్య ఉన్నటువంటి ఆత్మ సంబంధాన్ని ఈనాడు మానవుడు విస్మరించాడు.
మ్యాన్ హెస్ గివెన్ అప్ ద ఆత్మిక్ రిలేషన్షిప్ దట్ ఎగ్జిస్ట్ బిట్వీన్ మ్యాన్ అండ్ మ్యాన్.
అందరి ఎందు ఉన్నటువంటిది ఆత్మ ఒక్కటే అనేటువంటి సత్యాన్ని గుర్తించినప్పుడు ఈ భేదత్వం మనం ఏమాత్రం ఉండదు.
Once we realize that it is the same Atma which exists in every man, there is no room for difference at all.
Kanuka manavattam anetundi tana vyaktitvamto prarambhamai
the humanity starts from with his individual
samajamlo praveshinchi
it enters into society.
Desham nundi vyaptinchi
it spreads to the nation.
Visham nundi antyamavutundi
and it comes to a close with the world.
కనుక ప్రపంచం యొక్క శాంతి అంతయి కూడా వ్యక్తి పైనే ఆధారపడి ఉంటుంది.
Therefore, the peace of the world rests on individual.
ప్రపంచము వ్యక్తి ఇరువురు కూడా మనసు పైన ఆధారపడి ఉంటున్నారు.
The world and the man together rest on
కనుక మనస్సును సరైన మార్గంలో ప్రవేశింపచేయడానికి తగిన కృషి చేయాలి.
వి షుడ్ మేక్ ఎఫర్ట్స్ దేర్ఫోర్ టు డైవర్ట్ అవర్ మైండ్ ఇన్ ది ప్రాపర్ ఛానల్. మత్స్యము ఫిష్
మా జలములకు విరుద్ధమైన మార్గమును అవలంబించి
గోయింగ్ కాంట్రీ
ప్రవాహములకు
గోయింగ్ అగెన్స్ట్ ది కరెంట్
తన యొక్క ప్రమాదమును తాను తప్పించుకోవడానికి ప్రయత్నిస్తుంది.
ఇట్ ట్రైస్ టు సేవ్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ ఫ్రమ్ ద డేంజర్.
అటులని మానవుడు దుస్సంకల్పములకు విరుద్ధమైనటువంటి రీతిగా తాను సంచరించి వాటిని అరికట్టి తన యొక్క ప్రమాదమును తాను తప్పించుకున్నందుకు ప్రయత్నించాలి.
సిమిలర్లీ మ్యాన్ షుడ్ మేక్ అన్ ఎఫర్ట్ టు గో అగేన్స్ట్ ది కరెంట్ ఆఫ్ బ్యాడ్ థాట్స్ అండ్ సేవ్ హింసెల్ఫ్.
ఈనాటి మానవుడు మత్స్యములకున్నటువంటి యొక్క తెలివితేటలు కూడా తాను గుర్తించుకోలేకపోతున్నాడు.
టుడేస్ మ్యాన్ డస్ నాట్ సీమ్ టు హ్యావ్ ద క్లవర్నెస్ అండ్ ది ఇంటెలిజెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ఈవెన్ ఫిష్.
ఈనాటి మానవుడు తన ప్రభావమును తన ప్రమాదములు కూడా తానే కల్పించుకుంటున్నాడు.
హీఈస్ కాజింగ్ ఆల్ ద ట్రబుల్స్ టు హిమ్సెల్ఫ్.
ఈనాటి మానవుడు తన యొక్క సుఖ దుఃఖములకు తానే కారకుడవుతున్నాడు.
టుడేస్ మ్యాన్ ఈస్ బికమింగ్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్ హిస్ ఓన్ జాయ్స్ అండ్ ఫర్ హిస్ ఓన్ సారో.
మన సుఖ దుఃఖములకు కానీ మన కష్ట నష్టములకు కానీ మన విచారములకు కానీ ఇతరులు దీనికి కారకులు కాదు.
ఫర్ జాయ్ ఆర్ సారో ఫర్ డిఫికల్టీస్ ఆర్ ప్రాబ్లమ్స్ నో వన్ ఇస్ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్.
మన సంకల్పములే మనకు ఈ దీనన్నిటికీ కారణం.
అవర్ థాట్స్ అలోన్ ఆర్ కాజింగ్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్.
అనేక శాఖలతో ఫల పుష్పములతో కూడినటువంటి యొక్క ఈ సంసార వృక్షములకు మనస్సే వేరు.
ఫర్ ది ట్రీ ఆఫ్ సంసార విచ్ హెస్ సో మెనీ బ్రాంచెస్ అండ్ లీవ్స్ ఇట్ ఇస్ ది మైండ్ విచ్ ఇస్ ద రూట్.
ఈ మనస్సును మనము నిర్మూలము గావించినప్పుడే ఈ వృక్షము కూడా నిర్మూలమవుతుంది.
ఇఫ్ యూ రూట్ అవుట్ దిస్ రూట్ దిస్ ట్రీ విల్ గెట్ డిస్ట్రాయిడ్.
ఏమిటి ఈ సంసారం అంటే?
వాట్ యు మీన్ బై దిస్? సంసార
బిడ్డలతో కూడినటువంటి కుటుంబమా?
ఈజ్ ఇట్ ద ఫ్యామిలీ లైఫ్ విచ్ ఇస్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ జాబ్?
కాదు, సంసారం అనగా సంకల్పమే సంసారం.
వెన్ యూ సే సంసారం ఇట్ ఇస్ నాట్ ది ఫ్యామిలీ, ఇట్ ఇస్ ది థాట్.
ఈ సంకల్పములకు మూలాధారము మనస్సే.
ది రూట్ కాజ్ ఫర్ దిస్ థాట్స్ ఇస్ ద మైండ్.
ఈ వేరు వంటి ఈ మనస్సును మనం నిర్మూలం గావించినప్పుడు ఈ సంకల్పం యొక్క సంసార వృక్షము నిర్మూలమవుతుంది.
ఇఫ్ యూ కట్ ది వెరీ రూట్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ మైండ్ దెన్ దిస్ ట్రీ ఆఫ్ సంసార కెన్ బి డిస్ట్రాయ్డ్.
అయితే మనోనాశను గావించటకు మార్గం ఉన్నదా అని సందేహించవచ్చు.
బట్ ఈస్ దేర్ ఎ మెథడ్ ఆఫ్ అన్హిలేటింగ్ ద మైండ్? ఈ ముప్పు తీసుకోవచ్చు.
లేకపోలేదు,
దేర్ ఈస్
అన్నింటికి అన్ని అంత్యములు ఉంటున్నది.
ఫర్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ దేర్ ఈస్ ఎన్ ఆన్సర్.
పుట్టిన వ్యక్తికి నయములకు వస్తువులకు అంత్యం ఉంటుంది.
ఫర్ ఎవరీ క్రియేటెడ్ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్ ఆర్
ఏ ఒక్కటి కూడా ఈ ప్రపంచంలో శాశ్వతమైన స్థితి లేదు.
దేర్ ఇస్ ఎ దేర్ ఇస్ నథింగ్ విచ్ ఇస్ పర్మనెంట్ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్.
కనుకనే దీనికి అనిత్యం అసుఖం లోకం అన్నారు.
దట్ ఈస్ వై ఇట్ ఈస్ సేడ్ దట్ ఈస్ ఇంపర్మనెంట్.
ఈ అనిత్యము అశాశ్వతమైనటువంటి యొక్క సత్యములందు మనము నిత్య సత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క తత్వాన్ని మనం పొందాలనుకుంటే దీనికి ఆత్మతత్వమే సత్యమైనటువంటిది. ఈ ఆత్మ సత్యమే సరైనటువంటి మార్గం.
ఇఫ్ యూ రియలీ వాంట్ టు ఫైండ్ సంథింగ్ పర్మనెంట్ సంథింగ్ జాయస్ ఇన్ దిస్ ఇంపర్మనెంట్ అండ్ సారోఫుల్ వరల్డ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ ది ఆత్మ విచ్ ఇస్ ది బేసిస్.
అందువలనే కాస్ట్ ఆఫ్ హ్యుమానిటీ అని మానవత్వం అనేటువంటిది సర్వుడి ఎందుకు ఏకత్వంగా ఉంటున్నది.
ఇట్ ఇస్ దట్ ఇస్ వై ఇట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ ది కాస్ట్ ఆఫ్ హ్యుమానిటీ.
అందరి ఎందు సమత్వంగా ఉండేటువంటిది కూడా మనస్సే.
ఇట్ ఇస్ ది మైండ్ విచ్ ఈస్ ఫౌండ్ ఇన్ ఈక్వల్ మెజారిటీ.
అంటే ఈ సంకల్పములు వేరువేరుగా ఉండటం చేతనే ఈ మనస్సు యొక్క స్వరూపం కూడా మార్పు చెందుతుందని దీని రంగులు.
బట్ ది థాట్స్ ఆర్ డిఫరెంట్ ఆల్దో ఇట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ మైండ్ అండ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ఆన్ అకౌంట్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ ది ప్రాబ్లమ్స్.
మనసు కూడా కొన్ని రంగులు ఉంటున్నవా అని విచారం చేస్తే ఉన్నది.
డస్ మైండ్ ఆల్సో హ్యావ్ సమ్ కలర్స్? ఎస్,
కలరోధ భావంతో కూడినటువంటి మనస్సు ఎర్రని రంగుగా ఉంటుంటుంది.
ది మైండ్ విచ్ ఈస్ చార్జ్ విత్ యాంగర్ ఇట్ ఈస్
స్వార్థ భావంతో కూడినటువంటి యొక్క మనస్సు గోధుమ రంగు వలె ఉంటుంది.
సెల్ఫిష్ మైండ్ ఈజ్ ఇన్ ది నేచర్ ఆఫ్ బ్రౌనిష్ కలర్.
అహంకారంతో ఉండినటువంటి మనస్సు కమలాపండు రంగుగా ఉంటుంటుంది.
ఈకోయిస్టిక్ మైండ్ ఈజ్ ఆఫ్ ది
సారీ
ఆరెంజ్ కలర్.
తర్వాత అద్భుతమైనటువంటి మనసు శుద్ధమైనటువంటిదిగా ఉంటుంది ఈ వస్త్రం వారి.
The mind which is given to God will be as clean and white as this cloth.
కనుకనే మనస్సును కూడాను అనేక విధమైనటువంటి రంగులను మనమే వేసుకుంటున్నాం.
We'll put different colors to our own minds.
ఇది కూడాను ఇతరుల యొక్క ప్రభావం కాదు.
It is not also the
మన సంకల్పములే మనకి దుర్గతిని సద్గతిని కూడాను చేసుకుంటుంది.
It is these very thoughts which give us a elevated high state or a lowly mean state.
కనుక సంకల్పములను సరైనటువంటివిగా మనం ఎన్నుకున్నప్పుడు అభివృద్ధి పరచుకున్నప్పుడే మన జీవితము శాంతి భద్రతతో ఉండగలదు.
Therefore, if we choose our thoughts on the right lines, the proper lines, the security is safe.
So that was a second clip in that discourse. Again, Swami is emphasizing on that point of, you know, how important the mind is, and Swami talks of that concept which Swami repeats often, yad bhavam tad bhavati.
Correct.
That mind actually decides what you see. It's quite true, you know. The very famous analogy of a man seeing a rope and thinking it's a snake.
Correct.
You know, in a sense, you see what you go out to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many times you see that with statisticians, you see that with economists, you know.
That's true.
You want to give a certain color, a certain picture to the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the numbers throw, you can actually come to the same conclusion because you're looking at it from that point of view.
Bias towards that.
Right. And you know, we're talking of Swami saying that man is thoughts and thoughts are man.
Mm.
I'm sorry, man is mind and mind is man.
Mm.
And literally Swami is kind of removing that line which is there between thinking and action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we then generally think that, you know, what is done is done.
Mm.
But you can think anything, but make sure that you do the right thing.
No, another way of putting it is, when he says mind is man and man is mind, suddenly you are wondering, what is man? He is not the body.
Right.
See, he says man is mind. So suppose I say I am my mind, I'm not talking about the body at all. He has separated the body. Man is mind, mind is man. So now we are going to the higher classes. So the syllabus is getting tougher and tougher.
You know, Swami is talking of good thoughts here, no?
Mm-hmm.
Only when man's thoughts are good, will his life be good. And the importance of, because as I said again, you know, do being good through actions, being obedient with actions
is easy.
It's actually easier. Of course, it is difficult when you're not accustomed to it. When you come here as a first, when you all came here to Swami, at least for me, you know, when you spent schooling and you come here, even physically, waking up early or following the disciplines, there were also ways in which we showed our obedience to Swami, but that is also only to a certain level. After it comes to the mind.
Correct.
Now I'm reminded of a very, very, very profound and beautiful incident which happened with one of our old students.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had had a certain unpleasant event in his family.
Okay.
Somebody whom they trusted a lot in the family had cheated them financially.
Okay.
And this person was very well known to everybody in the family. You know, they all knew him, and they didn't expect that of this person to cheat, to fraud the family, you know, a huge sum of money. So one day he was sitting in Mandir and, you know, he was thinking about this. He was very upset with what had happened. And mentally he was ruminating all this, and he was boiling with anger. So one of the things he was thinking was, Swami, I'm your student. I cannot go and physically hurt that person because, you know, you forbid us from doing that and having this image of being your student. I cannot do that. So then he said, but that doesn't stop me from mentally, you know, harming him.
Oh.
So sitting in Mandir, he closed his eyes and he said, you know, I'm just going to vent out my feeling by thinking that I'm harming him physically. So he was sitting there and, you know, he was imagining himself boxing this person.
Okay.
Okay, he was sitting and he's thinking, I'm boxing this person, I'm, you know, killing this fellow with my punches. And when this was going on, Swami suddenly came out of the interview room, came to him and said, hey, what are you doing? Okay, he said, Swami, what happened? I'm not doing anything. He said, what are you doing? And I think Swami called him inside the interview room, and Swami reprimanded him very strongly and mentioned that person's name. And Swami said, you've killed him 7 times.
Pah.
Okay, he said, Swami, I'm just thinking mentally, and I'm not going to repeat this thing in action.
Mm.
I'm just thinking it and just venting my anger out. Swami said, no, it's not right.
Mm.
You've already killed him 7 times. Okay, and Swami said, even though you do it in the thought, you know, you will face the repercussions and it will hurt him also.
Ooh.
And the beauty of this thing of Swami saying you killed him 7 times, you know,
correct.
Not did he understand it, and you know, we forgot about it. He narrated this to us, and we were talking about this thing the other day. It never struck a chord with us.
Mm-hmm.
But the other day when we were talking about this topic of reflection, reaction, resound, you know, we said, when you say reflection, whatever happens to you is reflection of what you've done and what you think. And reaction again is what you do comes back to you.
Mm-hmm.
But resound is something which Swami has given a special twist to it. Swami is saying that, you know, not only what you do comes back to you, but it also comes back manifold.
Oh.
It has the ability of, you know, multiplying.
Multiplying. Mm.
And scientifically, when you talk of echo, when you talk of resound,
correct.
It is said that any sound echoes 7 times.
Oh.
And scientifically also, any form of vibration or energy which is sent out into the universe actually gets multiplied 7 times. Fuck. And here Swami was telling this boy that you've killed him seven times.
My God, every word of Swami is so just absolute truth.
Right.
And you just can't realize the meaning at that time.
And it also shows Swami's expectation, you know, what level it is.
You know, as Swami was telling this portion, is saying that therefore you should have good thoughts, you should not have bad thoughts. I say, Swami, what is this bad thought? What is a bad thought? And the next line so beautifully explains, he says, bad thought is one that separates a man from a man and makes him forget the common divinity. Means anything that makes you think you are separate from the other person is a bad thought, Swami.
I mean, that's very, very profound, because you know, what is said is, there are only 3 cardinal sins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the discourse, Swami says there are only 3 sins which man makes.
Mm.
Everything else, you call it a sin, you know, based on the law of the land and the regulations that you have set for yourself.
Correct.
But from God's point of view, there are only 3 sins.
Mm.
Swami said, one sin is thinking that you are the body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And thinking that so-and-so is mine.
Mm.
And this person belongs to me.
Correct.
That is second thing.
Mm.
And the third thing, Swami says, is... I'm sorry, it slipped my mind. It's something similar to this. It again comes back to this idea of individuality, thinking that I'm a separate individual. Swami says these are the only 3 sins.
Oh.
You know, what we think of harming a person and all that, it all stems from these 3 main things.
Wow. So that is a bad thought, finally.
So no wonder we're all sinners in so many
times. Very conveniently... Actually, if you see the way Swami is expounding this, thought and the mind, this is most scientific. And scientists can casually say this is the law of nature. And this is, this is the law. I mean, this is so logical, so clear, so absolutely. And he just says your thoughts, therefore have good thoughts. Good thoughts is seeing unity in everybody. The moment you have good thoughts, your mind, your chitta is purified. Your chitta is purified, your mind is stable. Then it turns towards the Atman and you realize you are the Atman. There is a straight path. I mean, I think somewhere in that Viveka Chudamani itself he was mentioning, even doing 1,000,000 pranayamas, you are not going to achieve anything. What you really need to do is inquiry. Self-inquiry. I think that self-inquiry and that strong love and urge to know the truth, that is most important.
You know, even when you're talking of a society, when you talk of a country, or Swami is mentioning that society, you know, an enlightened society is that where each individual sees his roles and responsibilities as a unit in that society.
Very true.
You know, when that doesn't happen, you have anarchism, where people are, each one is, you know, ruled by their own whims and fancies. And actually, that is what Swami is telling here, that all the disharmony you see and all the fight you see is because of this individual forgetting that he is part of this whole. And you know, when that difference comes, that is a cause for all problems. When man sees another man as separate, that is a root cause for all problems. And that lies in the mind. And that is why controlling the mind and dealing with the mind is so important.
You see, of the, even if you say what is Atma Dharma and Paradharma, I think you have discussed on this topic sometime. Doing actions, keeping that innate, knowing that innate unity with everybody, I think is Atma Dharma. Is that what Swami says is Atma Dharma? Or is
right.
There?
Swami says, you know, Swami also calls it very interestingly, Swami calls it Satya Dharma also.
Okay.
In fact, the major part of the Dharma Vayani, Swami doesn't coin the word Atma Dharma. Swami says Satya Dharma.
Oh.
And then Swami says Satya is that only one thing is Satya, not the spoken truth. Only one thing is Satya, that is...
All are one.
All are one. So that Dharma which springs from that belief that all are one is Atma Dharma. Satya Dharma and Atma Dharma are one and the same. That's what Swami says.
Para Dharma is other Dharma.
Yeah, all the other Dharma which are subsidiaries, you know, like petroleum products you take from the crude oil. And you know, even here, as you were saying, what are bad thoughts? And Swami answers it. Here Swami again throws that question and answers it himself. This mind which is all powerful, can it ever be ended? The mind which is Swami saying is the seed for the tree of samsara. For this multiplicity, what you see as multiplicity.
What does he say? Actually, samsara is thoughts.
Right. Swami says samsara does not mean only worldly life of having family and all that. This... Well, whatever you see...
Samsara is sankalpa, he says. Samsara is sankalpa.
Okay. So then Swami is saying that, okay, now this is causing all this problem, can it be ended? That's the question which will arise. That's what Swami says. And Swami says, yes, it can. And he says that...
Mind is the root.
Yeah, destroy by diverting the thoughts to the inquiry about the Atman. As you said, inquiry.
Inquiry. That is something which everybody has laid stress on.
Very true.
Inquiry. Think of Ramana Maharishi, think of everybody. They just keep telling you, keep thinking, who am I, who am I? I think the basic knowledge is there inside you. All you have to do is just focus all your attention of the mind into that one aspect of who I am really.
And never give it up.
Never give it up, that's true.
Right. One of our colleagues was telling us the other day, he went to... Nisargadatta Maharaj.
Okay.
And went to his presence and, you know, he said, if you have any questions, you ask. So he said, I want to know who I am. And immediately he said, that is enough. Hold on to that question.
Hold on to that question.
And never give up till you get the right answer.
Wow.
And he said, whatever answer comes, don't accept it. Because whatever answer comes is coming from your mind.
Oh God.
So he said, don't accept it and hold on to that question.
Just hold on to that.
It almost says that, you know, it doesn't matter what comes in the end of inquiry, the inquiry itself is paramount.
Wow. Here he gives that beautiful example of fish going against the current.
Right.
See, that's what exactly what you said right in the beginning. The most obvious thing is diversity. So here when he says you are swimming against the bad thoughts are one which sees it as diversity. So the moment you are swimming against your bad thoughts, then you are swimming towards the right direction.
So I think that's... And of course the last part which Swami says, I hope Swami explains it towards the later part of the discourse.
Yeah.
Swami saying that mind also has colors.
Colors. I don't know if he is referring to the aura of a person.
Maybe. And I mean, that is understandable, you know, aura, because people who have the gift of seeing auras, that's what they say, depending on whether you're depressed, there's a color. That's what was the experience of Mr. Baranowski, right?
When that's true.
Comes to Swami. He says, not only Swami is having the largest aura he has ever seen, the aura of love. That's what he says, the color which pertains to somebody who has immense selfless love.
Correct.
Not only does he see Swami having that aura, he sees that this aura is also infectious.
True.
That it has the ability to wash over all the other auras and, you know, give that unified love aura when Swami comes out for darshan. That's the experience
that's
he has,
true.
Right?
That's true. I think, see, when you are in Swami's presence, you feel, wow, you feel so happy. But just to explain that feeling, there are so many things that are happening. His love, his energy just engulfs you. So therefore you feel so happy, if you look at it that way. There's something that's happening which you cannot see, which is the actual reality. So coming back
to... You know, one thing which Professor Kasturi writes in Satyam Shyam Sundaram is when he is narrating, reeling out experience after experience of Swami, curing people, giving darshan of Ishta Devatas and all these things, he said one wonders, where are all those people who witness all these? Okay, because these were people who had the most awe-inspiring experiences. What happened to all these people? And he says, because they all left because this was just one aspect of Swami. The other aspect of Swami was a person who was a very strict disciplinarian who wanted a certain thing from his devotees, who had very high expectations of those who claimed to belong to him.
Correct.
And many people who felt, you know, they couldn't live up to that, they felt it was easier going back to their life, you know, where Swami was just a distant part.
No, but that's very true with Swami till till he left us. He would never force anybody to do anything. He would always say, this is the truth, this is the path. Follow it if you want.
You know, talking of thoughts being so powerful, and Swami saying, as I was saying, that it looks like Swami is removing the line which divides thoughts from actions. And something we narrated even this morning, and I think it's worth recalling. Swami Satchidananda, who came to Swami in the early 1957, now he had the duty of administering a huge ashram and all that. And you can imagine, 1957, Swami is about 30 years old.
Correct.
And here was this 71-year-old veteran spiritual master who comes to Swami. And Swami pats him on the shoulder and you know, advises him. He says, why do you get into all these mess of administration and all that and organizing spiritual movements? And Swami says, you will give much more benefit to this world if you retire to a cave and do your tapas there. Swami says, your yogic vibrations will penetrate the walls of the cave and come and benefit the people here. You know, one thing Swami advising, you know, a 30-year-old Swami advising. And you know, he says after that, of course, he spends a lot of time with Swami and he declares that Swami is the Sarvabhutantaratma himself. And I know it with all my conviction.
Wow. You're so fortunate to
hear from him the ways of controlling the mind.
And it is his compassion that he allowed a recording of this discourse.
Very true.
We are not the rishis who can tap into the cosmic sound and hear what Krishna told way back in the Dwapara age. But he has given us the tool of technology where we have recorded his sound. And we are just able to play it back. And you just close your eyes and just imagine Swami actually speaking. When you hear his voice, you can actually see him standing there and giving the discourse.
And you know, to look at it that way, and that's exactly what we're doing here, Shravanam, Mananam, Dididhyasanam. Swami is giving us an opportunity to tune the senses to what Swami is telling. As you're saying, he's giving us the opportunity to even mentally visualize Swami standing there. And Mananam, of course, what we are humbly trying to do, to engage the mind in what is heard, what has to be heard, what has to be rightly thought about.
True.
And the only thing left is to pray to Swami that the Nididhyasanam happens.
True.
Because His grace alone can make that happen. So I think the time is drawing to forcing us to draw this program to a close, dear listeners. Bishu is here for his last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And you would agree with us that this is definitely being such a profound experience to listen to these discourses which Swami gave over 2 decades ago. And we will be continuing this. You can join us next week, 7:30 on Thursday Live, for the next episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. In a short while, you will be joined by Bishu. We offer this humble effort of ours at Bhagwan's lotus feet and thank him for this opportunity. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.